You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, brought to you by themortgagewarrior.com. Use home equity to reduce stress today. Call Steve at themortgagewarrior.com. It could save you thousands.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
All right, it's hour number two. Scott MacArthur and Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star, TSN, TSN 1050 contributor, in for Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog. The boys are back after a holiday-long weekend tomorrow. What do you think they're doing today?
Having fun, man.
No, they're sprawled on the couch.
You think isn't the O-Dog kind of in that cottage set? Like, he'll be up there with all the hockey players in cottage land.
Is it the Muskoka
bitter
six?
End? I don't know. Is he part of the Muskoka? Yeah, maybe he is the Muskoka 5 plus one.
Plus one. He's just kicking around.
He'd be that guy, wouldn't he? Isn't he the guy that everybody invites along?
No question.
For fun, for no hijinks, doubt. For comic relief.
Noodles is probably still recovering from the surgery last week.
Is that what he had
the back
week,
surgery
yeah,
last
back
week.
Surgery.
And Hayes, if he's not chasing his little daughter around, he's probably wailed, lampooned on the couch.
Well, he says he's found religion on working out. Did you hear that one?
I heard this a bit last week. Okay, so I've fallen away.
You? All right,
yes.
You're a fitness enthusiast.
I went this morning, Dave, for the first time in about 3 months.
Now, wait a second. You are a guy who identifies, self-identifies.
I got to change some of my hashtags.
As a fitness enthusiast.
Yeah, well, I fell away from it.
Okay. What happened?
Well, do you actually want the story?
Well,
it's not that
it's a good one.
No, it's it isn't. Well, here's the thing. I sprained my AC joint a couple of years ago.
Which is where?
That's right here. That's the complicated.
You're pointing to your.
That's the complicated shoulder joint.
Right.
And I continued to push through it, and it was bothering me, and it was bothering me, and I got it checked, and then I did some physio, and on and on and on. And then one day last September, I was doing a set of squats, and I put the bar back on the rack, and I said, you know what? I'm tired.
Of this?
Weightlifting
thing?
I swear to God, and I walked out of the gym. I said, until the Jays are out of the playoffs, I'm taking some time, because there was travel involved and this and that. I'm just, and then, you know, when you get out of your routine, you never really go back. So I was off and on November to March, and then the last time I went was early March, and I thought, you know what? You don't have to get up early this morning. Why don't you go for a jog on the treadmill? So I did that for 20 minutes, did a couple of leg exercises. So Hayes and I are pretty much at the same spot right now.
Wow.
We're starting from scratch.
Scotty, I'm surprised by that, I got to say.
Well, I take that as a compliment, because you're looking at me saying, well, it doesn't look like you've put
good.
On 70 pounds.
You look really good, and you've always kind of been like, the sports media has a reputation for being a bunch of slothful, lazy, fat, you know, crap-eating, beer-drinking losers, basically, in terms of
losers.
Their physical. No,
oh,
in terms
okay.
of their physical appearance. Like
okay.
most, and I include myself in that. Like I've had many, many days where I'm like, why did I eat those 40 chicken wings and 12 beers after the game? Like, I shouldn't have done that. And yet you always stood out to me as an example, as a shining light of hope that, yeah, you can do this job, you can grind it on the road and still look like Scotty Mack. What's wrong with me? And now you're still looking good. So how do you keep it off, Scotty?
Well, this is the one thing I won't drink is soda pop.
Okay.
I won't drink
as I slug down my Coke.
I didn't even notice that. I didn't even notice. So, no, I'm not passing judgment. But the funny thing is you do eat worse and you do drink worse when you're not working out. Because when you are working out, your body needs the fuel. So plowing through a bag of Doritos isn't going to solve your hunger pangs. And it's going to offset your gains, as they like to say, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I would find myself in the last few months, I've eaten more pizza in the last few months than I probably did like for 3 or 4 straight years and all that. But the one thing I've kept away from is pop,
mm-hmm.
because it's so high in sugar. And that's what got me one of the things that got me in the 2013 season when I did the first year on the Jays beat, and I fell away from the gym, and I was doing the beer and the chicken wings and all that stuff late at night, and I'm like, man, you got to get yourself together. You're not going to survive 162 games again if you do in 2014 what you did in 2013. And that's where I really had that come to Jesus moment with the fitness. It's like, I don't know how, but I got to figure out a routine, and I got to somehow stick by it. Because with all that travel and all that stuff, it gets crazy.
Oh, it does. It does. It's so easy to fall off, man. But anyway, Hayes, who, you know, was a, you know, nearly a pro athlete, right? Played junior hockey with the Barrie Colts. I mean, I guess he'd fallen off, and now he's back on the workout thing, joined a gym. I mean, that kind of goes counter to the Overdrive image in some ways, doesn't it?
Did he learn a lesson from the 10K?
Sounds like he was embarrassed.
Or was the 10K, hey, I enjoyed this. I gotta take the next step here.
Well, I think I heard him say he was inspired by the 10K, and I know that feeling. You know, when you're around, like I go to the Olympics, cover these incredible
inspired
athletes.
By himself or inspired by everybody else blowing past
well,
him.
Inspired hey, you never by know. All the people who actually were in shape to finish, you know, hours ahead of him. But you know that feeling though when you go to one of those high level athletic events, and not that a 10K is, but you're just good athletes at any given 10K. You go to like an Olympic marathon, or you go cover the Olympic triathlon, you're like, yeah, I should probably get on a bike now and then. I should probably learn to freaking swim, you know, more than 20 meters without puking. You know, it's inspiring to be around the great athletes of the world, I find. It hasn't really translated. It hasn't really rubbed off onto me yet, but I'm hoping, man. You never know.
Life gets so busy, too, that you just, well, okay, so I want to go to the gym tomorrow morning, but then the night before gets in the way. So you have a couple beers, but a couple turns into six, turns into eight. And then the next morning, you wake up 2 hours after you thought you would because you've hit snooze, and you got a blitzing headache because you're into your late 30s and your hangovers last a day and a half now instead of brush off after, you know, 3 or 4 hours. That's the thing. There's always a trap. Nothing is foolproof. The best laid plans, go by the wayside. Happens all the time.
100%. Well, man, I mean, it's, you know, it never had occurred to me when I first started as a sports writer, it never occurred to me that my habits of, you know, going out for beers and chicken wings with my colleagues was, never occurred to me that that was a bad thing. It seemed like networking.
It didn't matter when you were 25.
And it didn't matter. But then I remember doing a story about a guy coming back from a neck injury named Gary Roberts. And he was down in Niagara. I was a Cub reporter down at the St. Catharines Standard, and he was down with a Niagara guy named Mark Scappaticci, who was a pioneering chiropractor, active release technique guy who was helping Gary through some of his neck issues. And Gary Roberts preached the gospel of Gary Roberts to me, I think maybe before he preached it to anybody. I don't know. He was probably telling his buddies. But he basically dropped my jaw when he said, I cannot be going out. I realized I cannot be going out for beer and chicken wings after hockey games and expecting to play at a high level. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, what else would you do after a hockey game than go out for beers and chicken wings? And yet Gary Roberts, as the great Jeff O'Neill has said on this show, ruined hockey, took the fun out of the game for everyone with those words, no more beers and chicken wings after the game.
Yeah, and there was a kale smoothie or something involved in there, too.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of interesting things in those Gary Roberts smoothies in the pre-drug testing days, but I'm just guessing.
Well, maybe today was the start of something for me, and maybe something last week was the start for Hazy. Who knows?
I'm hoping for you both.
1050 could just end up totally jacked.
The whole station could be ripped.
Get Naylor and Landsberg on a plan.
Could you imagine? Well, Landsberg's like a fitness freak. He's spinning. He does that spinning stuff, which I could never relate to.
I'd puke.
I don't know how you could sitting on a bike that is going nowhere for an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, I could probably handle the Tour de France more easily because at least you got scenery. You know, I just don't know. Like looking at the butt of the guy in front of you. Well, maybe let's not get into that. I don't want to get into that, but you know what I'm saying? But this station is on a fitness kick. You're back. Hayes is back.
One day is not back, Dave, because I got my show at 1 o'clock again tomorrow, which means I'm going to have to get up early if I'm going to make it back-to-back days. There are no guarantees because that alarm comes awfully early, and I won't even hit snooze. I'll just turn the phone on. Advance the alarm about an hour and a half or two.
Do you do that?
Oh yeah, no question. I've had my plan has been to go back for months now, And every time I think it's time, nope, wake up in a haze, I'm not interested. So maybe today.
You
maybe.
Wake up in a haze.
Maybe today is the start of something. Speaking of physical exertion, Hayes Noodles and the O-Dog are gearing up for the Scotiabank Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer Tournament. That's on September 23rd at Woodbine Racetrack. Visit tsn1050.ca to make a donation on behalf of Team Overdrive. And for every $20, you'll be entered to win roster spots on the team for you and a friend. And all proceeds go to the Princess Margaret Cancer Center. The Blue Jays could be getting the left side of their infield back by the end of this week. Troy Tulowitzki, Josh Donaldson will be playing tonight down in Dunedin for the single-A Dunedin Blue Jays to kick off their respective minor league rehab assignments. Maybe, just maybe, some good news for this team. Dirk Hayhurst is a TSN 1050 Blue Jays and MLB analyst. He joins us now. Our insider brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln, your premier source for auto service and sales in the GTA. Dirk, the good news is they're getting back out there, Donaldson and Tulowitzki back out there on the field. The thing that gives you caution is the way this season has gone for the Blue Jays. Let's wait and make sure that they get through a couple of games before we declare them healthy and ready to come back to the big team.
Yeah, you want these guys to be at full health, really, because look, this is what the Blue Jays are holding on to. They're going to get their roster back to full strength with Donaldson and Tulowitzki coming back. And so the thought process is if Jose Bautista is going back to his norm, and then you get these other two guys back in the lineup, and these periphery guys right now that are carrying the load at the moment continue to hit like they have, this could be a pretty potent lineup. But the best news is that there's no clear runaway favorite right now in the AL East. So conceivably, it could be that you get the left side of the infield back. It gives you some options now in the outfield. You might see Pompey later on. I mean, Alford is this is his first time playing above Class A, so you're going to see some other guys back. If this lineup, which was so cold for so long, starts to heat up, given the fact that the bullpen is stabilized and the starting rotation is still doing what it knows to do, this could be a chance for them to get back in it. Now, that's a big what-if, because I'm not sure that this is the last time you're going to see the injury bug bite this team. And I do still feel, and we've talked about this several times, Scotty, I still feel that this season is going to be that close miss, a real nail-biter to get back close to contention and then a heartbreak. But if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in the next month when these guys get help.
Well, yeah, health is one thing, but hot bats are another. And they've obviously, Dirk, had some hotter bats and some better timely hitting than they have early in the season. What do you make of the current streaks of Devin Travis and Bautista in particular? Do you think those upticks in their performance are sustainable?
Well, the thing about Jose Bautista is that when you look at his on-base percentage, given his ability to command the strike zone from the batter's perspective. I mean, he has a really finely tuned eye, and he finds a way to get himself on base, be it by walks or just intimidation to the umpire. You know, I'm Jose Bautista. I will pimp a bat at you. I think honestly, Jose Bautista was just. I think to put this in perspective, Jose Bautista is one of those guys who has had a nice run in slugging here in this month, and that's changed his OPS dramatically. But what's went alongside of that is a lot more swing and misses, especially on breaking pitches. I mean, the league has fed him off-speed pitches, mostly sliders and curveballs. And for the first month of the season, he was ice cold on them. It was a lot of swing and misses. His swing and miss percentage has scaled up dramatically. So I don't see the fact that there's a decline in his ability to spot pitches in or out of the zone. What I'm seeing is swing and misses. And so what I'm worried about is that Jose Bautista will not sustain this hot streak because it's more like a guy who's swinging more liberally now, running into a few more choice pitches than he was early on. So he's got some mistake pitches to hit. If that's the case, and Donaldson and Tulo come back and they're hot, it's only going to get better because he's going to be in a situation to get more of those mistake pitches. So I think there's a potential for that to sustain, but I don't think you're ever going to see him return to the Jose Bautista of yore. I really don't. And you have mentioned that you know, this team's got more timely hitting than they did at the beginning of the season. I mean, for God's sakes, just getting a hit for some of these guys would be considered better than the way they started at the beginning of the season. But you spoke about Devin Travis, and I wanted to touch on that. You know, Devin Travis, and I think the Star did a great piece on this. You know, he was one of the most unlucky hitters in all of baseball, if not the most unlucky hitter. His weighted on base percentage, it skews horribly to the tune of unlucky. I mean, he had hard hit balls. The ball off the bat had great exit velocities, but it'd be right at somebody. So he had the old Adam ball working against him. And I think if he continues to hit with the kind of velocity that he has, the barrel striking the ball, and the kind of consistency that he has of putting good swings on it, something was going to break loose. I mean, there's the stat heavy way of saying it, which is what I just said, but in baseball land, we just say, hey, just keep putting good lumber on it, and he has been. And I think that's starting to pay dividends now. So I think he can sustain with the bat as long as he's healthy, and that's a big issue because the guy is made out of porcelain. I'm just waiting for him to slide in head first and break a finger or pull an Achilles or, you know, hurt himself stretching. You never know with Devin Travis as far as the health side goes, but I know that the potential for the offense has always been there.
Dirk Hayhurst, our guest on Overdrive, and you can follow him on Twitter, at the Garfus. Dirk, Aaron Sanchez is back on the disabled list with the recurrence of a blister issue. Now, the team called it a right middle finger laceration. That's the finger that's been affected by the blister. Pete Walker, the pitching coach for the Blue Jays, says that this blister has cropped up in a different spot on the finger than the previous issue. We know that part of the nail was removed about a month ago. That led to a disabled list stint. Aaron came back, and then the remaining part of the fingernail split horizontally. That sent him back to the DL, comes back again. Now we've got this. This is something he has had off and on over the last few seasons, so we acknowledge that, but it seems to be far worse now. How worried should we all be about this chronic issue?
Well, I think you should be, actually, I hate to say this, I think you should be very worried. And the reason I say that is, you know, when you have a piece of your fingernail removed, surgically removed, and I don't know if this is one of those situations where he had the nail removed, the nail will never grow back again, or they have to continuously have hunks of the nail removed, but it changes the way that your hand operates on the baseball, and it changes the way that, I try and make this as concise as I can, but when your finger rolls across the ball, and you're a big guy and you throw very hard, and it rolls down the length of your finger right off there to the fingertip, you know, that soft skin that's under the cuticle usually gets kind of backstopped by the fact that you have a nail there, okay? And when the ball rolls there consistently, sometimes that nail can snap, and it sucks, and it hurts, but at least you know you can manage it because you can attach glue and other stuff to the nail to hold it in place. I had to do that my entire career. I had to glue my nails because they split, and I didn't throw anywhere near as hard as this guy. So I imagine that it's pretty severe and it's pretty painful when he throws. But now without that nail there, you know, when that ball rolls down that finger and that soft tissue gets swollen with blood as you go to full extension, I mean, you have a massive blister there, and it's going to continue to form over time as blood continues to get trapped out there in the finger and then turn into another blister. I mean, I could see this turning into a friction blister almost every time he's asked to throw 50-plus pitches or something close to it. And if I'm a pitcher, if I'm a pitching coach or a team that's relying on this young man to be Cy Young worthy, this is horrifying.
Okay, so, I mean, I can't sit here and think of a very obvious solution myself, and I presume it would be putting you on the spot to have one too, but because you said it, 50-plus pitches, I'm thinking to myself, and this is total pie in the sky and out in left field, if Biagini can hold the fort in the starting rotation and you do get Liriano and you do get Hap back, is perhaps the best place for Aaron out there in the bullpen? I can't believe I'm asking this, but you just gave a pitch limit there that triggered the thought. Am I beyond crazy?
I mean, stranger things have happened, but if
you don't want it to be that way,
I'm fine with it. I mean, look at what the Indians did to the Blue Jays last year when their front end of their rotation was decimated, and it was just Johnny Allstaff out there for three nights out of every five nights of a rotation go. You know, if you have a guy out there that you know you can bring in and he is the guy that will set you down, he is your terminator, and then he hands it over to Osuna to close, I'm fine with that. Because, yes, you'd get a lot. There's always more value out of a dominant starter because he eats up so many innings. I think we can all agree on that. But if you have a lot of good starters, okay, and you have one dominant high-leverage arm coming out of the middle in the middle of the game to hold down leads and to stop rallies, that's a huge get. And not every team in baseball can be that lucky. And sometimes guys that just can't have sustained use because of innings limits on body parts end up being put in those situations. You know, that is one of the funny things about the fingernail is that, you know, a fingernail, if it's close to breaking and you stop, it resets. The next day you get that blood out of your finger. You don't have to worry about the blister, the callus forms. Whereas if it's with your shoulder, it can happen at any time. I mean, there really is no mitigating it. You just hope it doesn't happen that one inning when you're out there in the first inning of a start. You hope at least you get to the end of it. But this is something that can be managed, and that's actually a very conceivable and rational solution.
So, Dirk, the Jays heading into Milwaukee for a series against the Brewers. When you look at the way this season has gone, and you're talking about could they have a run that would make them just miss the playoffs. Is that sort of a nightmare scenario for you if you're Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, given that you'd like them to declare whether they're a playoff contender earlier rather than later, if you are indeed going to liquidate some assets in the search for a better minor league system and a better future?
Well, it's never fun to be the person who pulls the dream out, the rug out from somebody who thinks the Blue Jays have got it. Now, and the expectations are set high. Last two seasons, you've seen them go to the postseason. It's always been a matter of, close shots or somebody not showing up. And now they have a chance to repeat, conceivably, if they get hot and they go on a run and it's really close. You know, you don't want to be the GM that says, look, I know they believe they can, and I know they've come a long way since the beginning of the season was so bad, but I really don't think they got the gas in the tank. We're going to go ahead and trade some guys, get rid of them, get some younger guys in here. But I think you have to be cruel to be kind in this scenario. I mean, if the Blue Jays are close, I think you have to know that the greater good is served here by getting rid of someone like Liriano now if there's a trade potential out there for him, or moving someone like Estrada, I think, who could be a massive get, especially to a team like the Astros at this point. I mean, there are a lot of top-end tradable assets here that you need to seriously think about moving, because you're not going to see a lot of guys from the minors this year. There just aren't a lot of capable replacements. I mean, I brought up Alford earlier, and this is a guy out of what, high A? This is first time above double A in the big league? I mean, most of the prospects are in high A or high A or lower at this point. And I think you need to bring in some guys that can be potential game changers for next season. So if it is close, I think you got to be the bad guy and fall on the sword here, so you can make next season that much better.
Yeah, the tough thing, Dirk, right, is that we all sit here and project the percentage of winning baseball they have to play between now and September to be playing consequential September games, but decisions have to be made really but by the end of July, or in some cases August perhaps. And that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about September.
Right, and if you think about it, I mean, think about Donaldson and Tulowitzki are coming back, not just like, oh, it's good to have you back. No, they're coming back with the weight of this season on their shoulders. It's primed for them. You guys need to come back and hit immediately, and we got to win a ton more baseball games because you're here, because that's the excuse right now. If you guys were here the whole time, this season we'd be in the middle of the pack. We'd be talking about acquisitions. We'd be talking about who we need to beat. Instead, we're talking about you showing up or not showing up, so we know if we're going to, dump this team this year or if we're going to go all in. So no pressure, guys. No pressure.
And
that's a hell of a way to come back to the big leagues.
No pressure. And it's one thing to say it to Josh Donaldson. It's another thing to say it to Troy Tulowitzki, Dirk, who essentially has been a league average hitter since he came to Toronto. I mean, this notion that Troy Tulowitzki is some sort of grand solution to the problem, that's passé, man. Maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah, Troy Tulowitzki has never been the Troy Tulowitzki that was traded. Something got lost in customs. It just didn't make it to Toronto when they traded for him. Look, I mean, he's still a fantastic defender. And he's a plus defender, especially when you're talking about a team that's so ground ball heavy, like Sanchez and Stroman. And while Sanchez isn't out there half the time, you've just got some parts missing from the equation to go all in on here. And I don't know if the Tulo that you're going to get off the DL is going to be the savior that everyone thinks he's going to be just because he had some injuries early in the season. And look, frankly speaking, it may take a while for Josh Donaldson to heat back up. I know he wants to be there, but there's no guarantees. I mean, just because these are big names often seen on the jerseys that fans wear does not guarantee offensive prowess upon return from the DL.
Awesome stuff, my man. Thanks for this. We'll talk again soon.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Dirk Ahers, TSN, TSN 1050. Blue Jays and MLB analyst. Our Baseball Insider brought to you by the Oakland Ford Lincoln Quick Lane, conveniently located at 570 Trafalgar Road in Oakville. We'll get Rod Black on the horn coming up on the other side, and we'll relive more of the World Hockey Championships. Canada loses in a shootout, so they effectively play Sweden to a tie, lose in a skills competition, but that's not the story. It's Nylander, it's Marner, it's the future of the Leafs. Seems like every hockey story, you can tie it to the future of the Leafs, the bright future of the Leafs. How nice is that to say? Rod Black, our guest next. Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk for the boys. Overdrive, TSN 1050. Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk for Hayes Noodles and the O-Dog. The Overdrive boys are back tomorrow after a holiday-long weekend. Hope you've enjoyed yours. And if you're stuck on the 400 right now, stay with us. We're with you until 7 o'clock. We've got some NBA talk coming up. A little bit more of the World Hockey Championships. And the story really was the Maple Leafs and the Maple Leafs' bright future. Just to tie a bow on our conversation, Dave, with Dirk Ahers. I keep wanting to tell myself that we don't really know what the Blue Jays are until we see the Blue Jays out there on the field completely and fully healthy.
Yep.
Donaldson and Tulowitzki obviously top the list in terms of position players. But here we are right now with absolutely certainly 40% of the starting rotation out of the equation, and right now it's 60% since Sanchez is back on the disabled list. Lariano seems like he might be the first to come back. Hap's still a while off. The problem is at some point, you have to start making decisions about what this team is this year, and based off of that, you make decisions for the future. And so, if this team never really gets back to full health, Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins might be sprung into action come mid to late June, some part of July, and we'll just always be left to wonder what could have been.
I think that's the most likely scenario. I mean, you heard Buster Olney say it on this station as the season was beginning, which is that it's a wish list of teams like the Blue Jays, the executive suite of teams like the Blue Jays, that the team declares itself early. Are you a contender or are you a pretender? And you want to know that as early as possible so you can do your planning and you can engage in the talks you'll need to do, because you can't make trades, you know, in 10 minutes. You need to have, you know, substantial discussions with multiple teams for weeks before you're going to know what the market is for the player you're attempting to move or the players you're thinking about moving. And you can make the judgment of which of those guys is going to give you the return you want in terms of prospects that's going to make this franchise better down the road, which is obviously the goal here in the Shapiro Atkins rebuild. And you know, the idea now that, you know, as you say, Aaron Sanchez may have a chronic fingernail problem, blister problem, Mr. Blister. It's an issue that complicates the matter, but it, in one way, but it also maybe clarifies the matter, because if you're going to be this unhealthy, if the Ducks just aren't lining up in the row that you hope they will for the oldest team in the major leagues, by the way, and if anybody that's shocked that they're injured, you know, talk to sports science guys. The number one predictor of injury in pro sports, you know what it is? Age. And this is the oldest bunch of dudes put together by Major League executive. These guys are old, man, and they're getting hurt. And now, Aaron Sanchez isn't old, but Tulowitzki, Josh Donaldson are in their 30s. They play hard. They've been playing every day of their lives. Takes its toll. The fact that it's taking it now might be a coincidence, but it's not necessarily a surprise.
Well, here's what I'm liking based on what I see in what to this point has been a trying season. You've got Marco Estrada, who is way up there among AL pitchers in strikeouts.
Yes.
So he's whiffing everybody. He was brilliant yesterday in Baltimore. I think he struck out 12 over seven innings, gave them exactly what they need to salvage a game of the series. There's high value there. Now, his contract's expiring, but you can sell him at the deadline, Dave, and I think you could get something. Not talking about a major league ready guy right now, but you could get, I think, a pretty reasonable prospect. And there are teams, Dirk Hayhurst mentioned Houston, I think the St. Louis Cardinals would be another team that might be interested in a guy like Marco Estrada. Heck, the way the Chicago Cubs are pitching right now, Estrada might be attractive to them. There are a lot of teams that would want Marco Estrada for their stretch drive. I think there will be value there. Jose Bautista has been very good over the last 2 weeks, and he's got that power stroke back. And I'm looking at it right now, and I'm saying to myself, if I'm Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro and I've got the mutual option on Jose Bautista's contract. Now, he's still a 10-5 guy,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay, so even though...
He'd have to agree.
Even though he was floating out there in the ether for a couple of months in the offseason as a free agent, his tie to Toronto didn't disappear. He's a 10-5 guy. He'd have to agree. But if he's swinging a hot bat and you know you're not going to pick up your end of the mutual option... That's another guy that I would investigate moving. And maybe there are some relief arms as well.
And the worst one, of course, is the fact that Donaldson's not healthy, because he's going to be the jewel of your liquidation if you're going to do that. And the fact that he's not on the field is going to make it very, very complicated to make that happen.
And there would be a lot of value in Josh Donaldson to another team for not just one but potentially two playoff pushes if the right deal came along at the deadline in July. All right, so the World Hockey Championships are in the bag. Canada loses in, well, skill competition fashion to the Swedes, but that's all the aside, right? Because it's about Mitch Marner and William Nylander. Nylander was the MVP of the tournament playing for Sweden. And every time we talk about the Leafs' future, this is just still to this day, it's bizarre to me. It's been like a year now. Feels like it's been about a year. But almost everything is positive about the Maple Leafs' future, and that was reinforced with the performance of those two players at the tournament. Rod Black hosted TSN's coverage of the World Hockey Championships, and he takes some time out of his holiday Monday to join us. How are you, my man?
Good, boys. Great to be with you on this holiday Monday. Yeah. I guess I'm not like the normal guys on this thing. Like, you guys, you're working, and what are they doing? They're golfing? They're barbecuing?
Who knows? What are you doing? That's what we want to know.
Actually, you know what? I will be honest. I'm actually going to go out and play some golf right now. So
nice.
I'm actually chilling. It was a long stretch. We had 17 straight days, and we, as you probably saw, we were wall-to-wall, 64 games of hockey, and trying to keep all of the Slovenians and Slovakias and the Latvias all together in one. Having said that, it came down to quite a thrilling Sunday.
Yeah, well, it was awesome. Let me ask you, how do you prep for something like that, Rod, especially in the preliminary round where you're dealing with topics and teams that ordinarily you wouldn't know anything about?
We got a great team. I mean, the thing is, you got to watch it, you know, and we're lucky we have some great analysts here, and Bob Arey and Dave Reed, and we've got some great researchers, and as you guys know, at TSN, they take every sport they do seriously. So, and this one being a major property, you know, we're on it. And I think it really, though, Scotty, is kind of a journey too. Like, you know, you get into it and you kind of warm into the tournament. It's kind of like the teams themselves. You know, the storylines take care of themselves, but each team has so many different storylines, and there are a lot of players that you've never seen before that have never been on the radar, and I think that's what makes the tournament very unique. I love that tournament just because the stories that develop, we kind of watch for the next few years, because they could be NHL players, they could be international players, or they're players on their way out, or as you mentioned off the top, you know, we're watching current, you know, rising NHL stars. I thought the William Nylander and Mitch Marner watch was incredible in this tournament. But every game, these two kids were fantastic, and that's the thing about the tournament. It's not the Stanley Cup, and I know there are people who think it's kind of a consolation prize, and maybe a few years ago they did. I'll tell you what, it's got a vibe now, and it is something. You watch the Canadians celebrated when they beat Russia. You watch the way teams celebrate when they win gold. To a lot of these teams, it is even bigger than a Stanley Cup.
Well, yeah, no question about that, Rod. I mean, William Nylander's cross-body block of Henrik Lundqvist to start the pileup in the crease.
I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah, there could have been an injury there, Rod. I was concerned for the Swedes in that one. But you know, interesting to get your take on Nylander, because it seems as though if there was one guy who raised his stock in this tournament, I think Marner might be close behind, but I do think Nylander was the guy that maybe turned heads the most. And we heard Victor Hedman, the great defenseman for the Swedes, talking about how he didn't know much about him, but that, you know, he's a world-class talent, is going to be an unbelievable player in the NHL for years to come. So not just a guy, not just one of, you know, these really good prospects the Leafs have been lucky enough to draft these past handful of years, but a guy who's going to be world class. I mean, what do you make of that, and how transferable do you think this his play on the big ice in Europe will be to the NHL as he goes forward?
I think it's just a confidence builder for the kid. I think, you know, he looked like he belonged, and a lot of it also had to do with Nicholas Backstrom coming over. And I think, you know, we'd be wrong in saying that, you know, Sweden's got a great team, but I don't think they are even in the gold medal game if they don't get those additions of Lundqvist and Oscar Lindberg and Nicholas Backstrom, because Backstrom and William Nylander were magic together. It was incredible watching them play, and I think it upped Nylander's game a little bit too. I love the way the kid plays, like the smile on his face, and maybe even that celebration with Henrik Lundqvist. He almost looked at Lundqvist like, "What did you do that?" He was also grimacing during the national anthem if you watched yesterday. So I think he actually did get a little banged up, but I loved watching him play. The kid's got so much skill, so much speed. We saw, you know, certainly sparks of it as a Maple Leaf playing with Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews obviously is also, you know, a step above maybe even these guys. It's unbelievable to think what the Leaf future could look like. I think the big ice, by the way, as many people think that the big ice opens up offense, that's contradictory, because the big ice actually closes it down and they start to play a shell game. I thought the kid was unbelievable at opening up lanes. And if you watch the whole tournament, it was incredible watching him day to day with Backstrom, the way they found seams, and he can shoot the puck. But I just love his unbridled joy that every time he scored a goal, every time he was on the bench, you couldn't help but watch him. And I think also having his dad in the stands, and the fact that Michael Nylander also won a world championship with Sweden, a couple of world championships. And I know I just heard it from, you know, the experts beside me. I can only go by, you know, my hockey fan eye, my hockey announcer eye. But, you know, I got guys who played the game at the highest level beside me, and they thought that he might have been the best player in the tournament.
Oh, yeah, and he gets the MVP award. What were Bob and Dave saying about Mitch Marner off air, Rod?
Same thing, yeah. Same thing. And, again, you look at these guys, and they're such baby face players. And, you know, you look at you think they're playing in the midget championship. And I think again, these little things in any sport that you play at, and that's why when your country calls or whatever it is, and Hockey Canada's got such an amazing program, I think it's not only important to do it, but I think it's mandatory to do it. I think you should go. And, you know, Connor McDavid, it helped him last year, you know, the kind of player he became again this year. And, you know, the progress they make. And I think every time you play in something, your confidence level will grow, and you develop and you mature, and you play with players that you learn something from. I think Mitch Marner learned a lot playing, you know, they were on the kid line with Travis Konecny and Braden Point. They were incredible. They might have been Canada's best line the entire tournament. But I also think it was good for Marner to be around somebody like Ryan O'Reilly and to see, you know, the veteran presence that he provided, and Claude Giroux, and just everything about being there. And I know these guys wear the Maple Leaf before, and they play in the juniors and all of these other things. But I think it's a little bit different because you're playing against NHL players, and you're playing against the elite of the elite, you know, barring the ones that are still playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I just think it does nothing but help their confidence down the road. And Marner was, again, exceptional in this tournament. It's funny how the young kids really rose up in so many ways. We've gone to the Worlds before, and we've talked about, you know, Alexander Ovechkin coming over. Yaromir Yager has been a storyline for so many years. But now we're starting to see the youth, and it's being served at the Worlds.
Rod Black hosted the World Hockey Championships here on TSN. He's our guest on Overdrive.
So, Rod, you've hosted your share of hoops this year and many other years, and I'm wondering what you thought of last night, because finally we saw a crack in one of the two teams that seem like they're heading on a collision course into the NBA Finals. Golden State Warriors, of course, were not that team. They're still 11-0, but now the Cleveland Cavaliers are 10-1 in the playoffs after their buzzer-beating loss to the Boston Celtics, and it was a night where LeBron looked human with 11 points on 13 shots. Do you think it means anything, Rod, other than an off night?
No. Yeah, I've been watching Stephen A. Smith and, you know, all the shows today and watched the game last night. And, you know, everybody's kind of going, the sky is falling, what's going on here? And there was a conspiracy theory, Dave. I know you probably heard it in the years past that, you know, sometimes even against Toronto last year, LeBron kind of let up a little bit to see what Kevin Love and others could help raise their game because he knew he was going to need it in the finals if he got there. I don't buy that. But I do buy the fact that you can have an off night. And I just think that that's certainly what, LeBron was frustrated. I thought the Boston Celtics played desperate. I would not have wanted to be someone who was betting heavily on the Cleveland Cavaliers for a sweep, because that was completely, anybody last night would have gone, man, that's a shocker. That was one of the real shockers. With no Isaiah Thomas, the fact that the Celtics looked so terrible in game two and the Cavs so indomitable, it's almost unexplainable what happened last night, but it's sports and it does happen. And I think it's just another wake-up call. I'm sure you probably agree. You've seen enough of the Cavs and enough of the NBA that the two super teams are going to meet. I just think it's a little blip on the radar personally. Could the Celtics, build on that? Sure they could, but without Isaiah Thomas, they're not beating the Cavaliers, and I don't think they're beating the Cavaliers another game.
All right, Rod, so before we let you go and you shoot your 59, give us
on the front nine.
On the front nine, yep. Give us LeBron's line in his so-called bounce back game four.
Oh, I'm going to say +40. I'll say +40. He's hovered near 38. He had 35, 36, 38 against the Raptors. And Dave, you saw him. He could have easily had 50 in some of those nights if he didn't pass it.
Yeah.
I think LeBron just takes it on himself. And maybe there is something to the fact that he was kind of deferring. My big thing for LeBron with me is I find him so unselfish at times. If he was even more selfish, I think he could probably pour 50 a night. But that's the kind of player he is. And I do think he just had an off night last night. Now, here's the other thing that could happen. If LeBron James does get hurt at some point, they're a completely different team. And yes, they are beatable, but still, with LeBron, LeBron James could make every team in the NBA, including Brooklyn and Philadelphia, a lot better, and he would be in the MVP talk. That's how good this guy is. He's Superman, and Superman bounces back, and he'll do it again.
Awesome stuff, Rod. Thanks for this. Have fun tonight, pal.
Great to be with you guys. Yeah, happy Victoria Day.
You bet. Rod Black on the golf course for a little evening four.
Wow.
It's
a good life. A little twilight golf.
Not bad. But again, I'm coming right back to it, Dave. I'm coming back to it. It's a good day to work. Good day to work. Hour number three of Overdrive coming up. Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk in for Hayes Noodles and the O-Dog. They'll be back tomorrow. Steve Ashburner, senior writer for NBA.com, will be along. He's in Cleveland right now covering the Cavs-Celtics series, so we'll delve into that further. More Blue Jays and hockey talk as well. My ProLine best bets on the other side. Overdrive continues on TSN 1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk for the Overdrive crew. They're back tomorrow. And it's time now for today's best bets brought to you by ProLine. This is where I attempt to win you some money. Good luck with that.
I've got my pen ready.
All right, you got it? Here we go. You call me on this too, Dave, if you don't like what I'm doing here. I'm taking Anaheim as the visitor in Game 6 in Nashville tonight, paying 210.
I like that pick.
I'm taking the Cubs at home over the Giants, paying 135. And I'm taking a tie, so that's within 5 points, Golden State, San Antonio. I think the Spurs are going out tonight, but I think they've got some pride. I think it's going to be a close game on home court. I think the Warriors finish the sweep, but I'm looking for value, and it's paying 450. Spurs playing with pride, keep it close, but lose.
You are treading on some dangerous ground there, Scotty. I know it could be lucrative ground if you are right, but you've noticed that the Warriors have been blowing them out by an average of nearly 20 points.
I noticed that Cleveland beat Boston by a gazillion points in Game 2, and Game 3 was a little different. I just think the Spurs pop, They're playing for pride. They're not going to win, but it's going to be close.
You know Kawhi Leonard is doubtful.
I know he is, and I know if he plays, he's not going to be anywhere close to 100%. But this is where I'm going with this.
I admire your contrarian view.
You throw $20 down this ticket, we'll pay you $255.20.
$255
million? If it did. If it did, I'd be playing this ticket. It'll pay you $255.20. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio, and you can get way into the game with ProLine. It's a sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. Coming up next hour, we'll have Steve Ashburner on, but we got to compare and contrast the NBA and the NHL playoffs.
Yeah.
And we had Pierre LeBrun in on the first hour, and he's talking, and he's absolutely right when he says, you have no idea what's happening night in and night out in the NHL, and what happens in one game doesn't mean anything two nights later in the middle of a similar series or the same series. The NBA, it's been written in stone. We knew we were getting Golden State and Cleveland. We are going to get Golden State and Cleveland. That's going to be the payoff, but there's been considerable pain to get there. There have been blowout after blowout after blowout.
Yeah, you'd like there to be some middle ground between the absolute chaos and randomness of the NHL playoffs, where handicapping, it's crazy because it's an injury lottery stacked upon a goaltender lottery, stacked upon a bounce off the butt, you know, in the crease, through three sticks off two ankles into the goal that wins the game. And then the NBA has gone to the total other extreme, where the two best teams are so far better than the other 28 teams, it's not even fun. I'd like to see, you know, somewhere in the middle of that, there's the perfect playoffs.
Yeah. We'll talk about maybe ways we can get there sometime down the road, although I don't really sense it right now because the super teams are the super teams, and they're super. And we're going to see him duke it out for a third consecutive NBA Finals. That will be a good payoff. Don't get me wrong. It'll be a good payoff. But there hasn't been much to chew on in these NBA playoffs, at least leading up to it. Steve Ashburner, senior writer for NBA.com, live from Cleveland. Game 4 tomorrow night. The Cavs with a 2-1 series lead. He'll join us to kick off the 6 o'clock hour. And so much more. It's Scott MacArthur and Dave Festchuk in for the Overdrive boys. You are listening to Overdrive, TSN 1050.